Hi, my name is Allison Mead, and welcome to What She Said, an episode of the LA FPI's podcast series. The Los Angeles Female Playwrights Initiative is dedicated to encouraging and promoting the work of female playwrights, and today I'm going to be speaking with Leslie Hardy, whose play A Good Grief is currently playing at the Lounge Theater in Hollywood. Leslie is a longtime stage and screen actor and has brought her years of knowledge to her writing. A Good Grief is her first production. Yay! And she's a member of the Alliance of Los Angeles Playwrights, the Los Angeles Female Playwrights Initiative, as well as the Writers Unit of Fierce Backbone. So welcome, Leslie.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this. Thanks, Allison.
Sure. A Good Grief focuses around four characters attending grief counseling for more, like one reason or another. They all have their different reasons for being there. I was wondering if you could start out by setting the stage a little for us, talking about why this area seems like a really good, ripe, juicy one for a new play.
Well, you know, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and I hadn't seen him for months or heard from him in months. And when we actually were speaking on the phone, he told me that his mother had died in the last year, and he was so close to his mom and had been going to grief counseling sessions. And just as you know, as a writer yourself, that just sort of planted a seed in my brain. We were on the phone for a long time, and I got off. And as the days went by, I started thinking about that and people losing, you know, whether it's a parent or a loved one in your life, and people going to grief counseling. And I just started thinking about different people. All of a sudden, these characters were appearing in my head, and there were these two men and these two women, and as you know, too, it was, you know, inspired a little bit from the conversation with my friend, and then my imagination took over from there, and, of course, touching somewhat on my own life. I guess that's a part of what we do as a writer. It's, you know, part reality, imagination, observation, and all of those things. All of a sudden, I had these four characters in my head, and all coming to this grief counseling session. And I wanted it to be about them. That's what really interested me. I wanted these people coming to this, and I don't want to say too much about it, but I wanted it to be about them as far as actually being in a counseling with a mediator, with a counselor there. What would happen if you put these four people in a room sort of left to their own devices for the evening? What would happen?
Well, it's also got a really clever element to its structure, which is that each character kind of stands in for one of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of grieving. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your choice to have this be the case and how you felt it contributed to your writing process.
You mean as far as the different stages of grieving?
Yeah, like sort of when that came to you, how you thought it would fit in with the structure.
You know, that's interesting. That actually was an observation that the producer of this particular production came up with. I hadn't even really thought of that when I was writing it.
That is so funny because, yeah, it does come across really clearly. So maybe it was subjective.
It did to her. It really, I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, it did to her so much so that when they were, you know, creating a flyer for the piece, the artwork, and she said, oh, yeah, each character sort of clearly. And then what I love about it, though, is that each character, there's a part of all of those stages. Mm-hmm. But interestingly enough, when I was writing it, I wasn't even thinking of that. Mainly what I was thinking about are why these people come together, for each one has their own reason that brings them to this place. And I wanted it to be, as an actor years ago myself, I was fascinated with what you come into a room with right in that moment. What's going on for yourself, for that character right in that moment? What's going on in their adult life? And then before that, those layers of experience, what has gone on? What was their childhood like? And each one has lost, in this case, each character has lost a parent or parents. And I really wanted it to be this amalgamation of childhood experiences that are revealed, that are slowly, these layers are slowly pulled back. And from some much more readily dealing with it to most of them, it takes the course of this, you know, what, 70, 75 minutes for it to be stripped back, and then all of a sudden you think they were there for one reason or encouraged to be there, maybe by a spouse to be there. But then as the layers come back, it's really what we're all dealing with and how childhood experiences so impact us and affect our daily lives as adults. At least it does for me. You know, things, the way I react to something or respond to something is so much about the way I was raised and my childhood. So that's really what interested me, that they are here. And maybe that's why the stages of grieving, it was interesting that it came about that, you know, it was thought that these characters, at least when they walk in, sort of represent different stages of it, of the grieving process. But really of more interest to me was having these strangers in a room and how they affect each other's lives and the impact they have on each other. I had a writer in the Fierce Backbone Theater Company, a really well-known writer, and he said, "Oh, I love this piece." It was very encouraging. I brought in one scene, and he said, "I really want to see more of it," which I said, "Oh, okay." But he said, "How about two acts?" And, you know, he had all these ideas, which were wonderful, and I took some of his ideas, but I really wanted it to be one piece, a full-length piece, without interruption. I wanted it to... these people come together for one night, one time, in a room, and what they walk away with. I didn't want it cut and dry that they all leave and are changed and go, you know, and no, it's life is not always that clear cut, but how they are impacted, they intersect at this place and then go on with their lives. And maybe in small ways there are changes, maybe they're not. That's what I would love to have people wondering about.
Excellent. Well, you mentioned Fierce Backbone, and that's what was one of my curiosities in talking to you, is how did that writing process work? Did you kind of work in workshops with them? Did you bring them pages or scenes? How did that work?
How it works, you know, I was an actor for years. I grew up going to the theater with my parents. They were huge theater people, and it was such a gift to me. But then when I was an actor, I did maybe one or two plays. I was raising my daughter, and I would, you know, certainly be away during the day for auditions or working, but it was more television stuff that I was doing. And at night, I wanted to be home with my daughter. So I didn't do a whole lot of theater myself as an actress. But when I started turning to writing, it just was the most disorganic. It was not a decision. You know how you do those things, and you look back and think it wasn't a conscious decision. This is just sort of the path that I'm on, writing for the stage, and it just felt right. An acquaintance introduced me to Fierce Backbone Theater Company, and they have an actors unit, writers unit, and directors unit. Mm-hmm. And for me, it has been invaluable. I don't, I guess every writer has their own way of working. But for me, how it works is that you are working on a piece, you submit it to someone who handles casting for the company, and you can bring in usually increments of, say, 20 or so pages of something that you're working on. They cast some of their actors from the actors unit in the piece, and then we have Monday night workshops just about every Monday night, and you can have your work read by these professional actors, and then afterwards you receive feedback from the group, from other writers, actors, directors, and... It's been a huge value to me as a writer. Of course, you know, anytime you're receiving feedback, some of it you smile and go, okay, but, you know, and kind of let go by you. And others, though, are gems. That's really an art itself as a writer, knowing how to sit there, and I really try to sit there and be open-hearted and smile. You know, I don't want to seem defensive in any way. I want all ideas coming to me. And then, again, some you let go, some you go, oh, yes. That's right. I was not seeing that. And it just, to me, it saved so much time. Instead of spending months writing something, it's like I can get a little way in and, oh, okay, let me get back on this path. Or, oh, I was heading off here and I think I want to come back in this direction. And then once you've come and brought in, you know, say, in these increments of 20 or so pages, then you can have a full reading. They'll assign a director to your piece and actors. You'll have a rehearsal or two and then bring it in for a full reading in front of the group.
Perfect. So
get more feedback and more revisions and more, you know, more rewrites, and there you go.
I also wondered for you, because you have such a heavy acting resume, how your acting skill set brought itself and presented itself and really helped to facilitate your writing.
Oh, thanks for asking that. I You know, I just heard Winnie Holtzman speak at the LAFPI gathering with Samuel French on Saturday,
yeah.
And she was talking about drawing on her acting. And I had not foreseen that. You know, the acting I did, I don't know how really if I have, I made a living at it, but as every sort of bread and butter actor does,
yeah.
You know, anything from commercials to not very good TV, but you're just so glad to get it, you know.
Yeah,
you're just so grateful for every job that comes your way, you know, if that's how you're making a living. But I think really more than, I was always studying. I studied with some really great coaches and always reading a play. I had someone tease me on a job saying, you're always holding a, you know, one of those small little paperbacks from Samuel French, always reading a play, always working on a scene, studying characters. And Then all those, you know, 18, 20 years of schlepping around on auditions, you know, was not for nothing, because it wasn't just that. It was reading and studying and in a class and working on scenes. And I think that does somehow, I had not foreseen it, that when I started writing and not even quite sure what I wanted to write, had an assignment to write. I was just in a fiction writing, just general sort of writing class, and we were going to write a scene and write dialogue. I remember even saying, I don't know how to write dialogue. How do you do that? And then it just, you start writing it. It's like, oh, okay. It was fascinating, and I was so grateful for those years of having been an actor, which I think a lot of actresses don't always have. That's such a strange business. You know, by the time I was hitting 40, and I just turned 50, by the time, you know, work auditions were really starting to get slow, and I'm so grateful that I can look back on those years with an appreciation for the time invested, whereas I think, you know, it could have been otherwise. It could have been looking back and, oh, gosh, I spent all that time, and at a time, you know, in your 40s when you're really hitting your stride in your career. And, of course, a lot of women are, but yeah. I was not one of those. It was really starting to go south as far as the number of auditions, and I didn't want to wait it out anymore.
Well, perhaps auditioning's loss is theater's gain.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, there's something about that. I know there's a big bifurcation in between actors and writers sometimes, or playwrights, and I do really think that each side of the table has something really to inform the other side, and so it's, I think you may be the first person I've spoken with who has done both to the level you've done them, and so it's interesting to hear your take on that. I think, yeah, probably more cross-acculturalization would be good for everybody.
Well, I everyone has their way. I just know that I have such an appreciation for actors, for what they are bringing to it, so much so that when we were in rehearsals for A Good Grief, and because it is produced by a theater company that I have become, you know, so involved with, and I know the director, and I knew the actors going into it, and I was invited to sit in on the rehearsals, which I hear is not always the norm, because this is my first professional production.
It is not,
I hear
no.
Writers. Oh, okay.
They knew you could behave.
What is that?
They knew you could behave. That's very respectful, because usually that's a sign that they, you know, they know you, they trust you, and they know you're not going to be crazy or high maintenance or anything like that. So that sounds like a sign of respect to me.
Well, and the respect went both ways. And what I was going to say about actors is that after being in there, I did step back at a certain point when they were really needing to get their lines down and didn't need to have me nitpicking over, you know, little words here and there. I stepped out. But what was so invaluable to me is that we went into the rehearsals with one script, and I came out with a much stronger script by being able to edit right on the spot, take out expository, you know, chunks. And at a certain point, I realized the actors knew the characters better than I did. And that's when I really started listening. You know, because this was a piece that had to get approved. I finished it about a year ago, and it had to be approved by the Fierce Backbone Artistic Committee and Production Committee, and yada, yada. Everybody has their, you know, way before something, you know, is selected to be produced. But because I'd had that distance from writing it, and I'd been working on several other things in the last year, and then the amount of work that the actors were putting into these pieces, it was it was interesting to realize when the actors came to me during rehearsals and were asking questions or questioning certain lines or a certain word. One actor realized his character slipped up and said the word died, and his character is very uncomfortable with saying died. He prefers to use another word, and he caught things in it. Oh my word, you're right. So to sit there and to go into it having respect for actors, but then it was doubled, tripled, magnified hugely because I was gaining their insights and ideas.
Yeah,
right there on
something
the spot.
About that so, really is helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
I do have one question, sort of like a fun what-if kind of question. I'm wondering if you feel like any of the characters in the play, because I don't want to give everything about it away. I want everybody to come out and see it. And as you say, think for themselves and come to their own conclusions. But I wonder if you think, as the writer, that they find their way to acceptance eventually.
That's an interesting question. You know, it can make me cry. I feel so strongly about these characters. And now, of course, they're mixed in with the actors playing them. But I remember when I was writing this and a girlfriend said, I haven't talked to you in months. I said, you know, my best friends right now are these characters that I'm writing. They're my favorite people to, you know, hold a dialogue with.
I think almost every writer who's going to hear this is going to understand exactly what you're talking about.
I'm sure. I would like to think some form of acceptance, some form of awareness or recognition about parts of their lives. And again, it's not just acceptance over, at least in my mind, it's not just acceptance over the loss that they are grieving or have been prompted. A couple of them are in there, not of their own volition, but encouraged to by other forces in their lives. I would like to think a light bulb, even a dim one, went on somewhere in their brain when they left the room, that they had something, even if in most ways they went back to their lives, that there was some small aha, you know, moment for each of them. Yeah.
And the question I always like to ask everyone last is, you are running at the Lounge until December 1st, I think it is. And I was wondering
right.
if you're working on anything else that we could look forward to or whatever is coming up for you next.
Oh, thanks. I was just working on something that I'm taking into a Fierce Backbone Monday night workshop this coming Monday. So I'm very much back in the saddle.
And any kind of little teaser, any themes, any like little plot points or anything you can reveal at this point?
Oh, well, you know, I've written a couple of things. This is the one I'm working on right now is the second piece that I wrote that was inspired by the West Adams neighborhood where I live with my daughter. And fantastic neighborhood and great neighbors and so many layers, so many, it's hard to even put into words. I wrote something called Roberta and the Pink Ice Cream Truck, which I am busy, and I know you know about this, submitting to different festivals and theaters.
Sure.
And
yeah.
So that's out there being submitted as much as I can. And this piece I'm working on now called The Big Blue, also inspired by a West Adams neighborhood. But yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm figuring my way here as a playwright and realizing, okay, it's one thing, you know, it's the writing, and then it's also the submitting, getting your work out there, whether to be developed further or taken and produced. And right now, I'm just trying, and I see how far I have to go, become the best writer I can possibly be. So I think that's more on my radar right at the moment, is to take a few of these pieces. Couple that have been completed in the last year and the one that I'm working on now, and to take them into some sort of developmental entity, to be really fleshed out and worked on in sort of a workshop environment. That's my goal at the moment.
Well, it sounds amazing. So thank you very much for spending the time with me. I know you were probably very busy with your production, but have a fantastic run, and we will look forward to seeing more things from you in the future.
Oh, thank you so much, Allison. Thanks.
A Good Grief runs at the Lounge Theater in Hollywood until December 1st and stars Rachel Bowler, Mandy Dunlap, Paul Messenger, and Gary Rubenstein. It's directed by Jeffrey Wiley. And for more information about tickets, please visit www.plays411.net and go ahead and search for Good Grief, or you might find it on the homepage. Or you can also call 323-960-7784 to make a reservation. For more information about LAFPI's resources, activities, and opportunities, please visit www.lafpi.com.